of her lobster? She was probably hungry after spending all that energy fighting with PK, and she might have stopped there to get something to eat. I'm curious to know Pinky's demeanor after that awful breakup. Traffic was light, and Hannah and Michelle arrived at the corner tavern a few minutes later. Since it was too early for dinner and too late for lunch, the parking lot wasn't crowded. Hannah found a spot very close to the front door, and they hurried inside to get out of the cold. "Hi, girls," Nona Prentice, the owner's wife, greeted them. "Hi, Nona," Hannah responded. "We didn't expect to see you here this time of day. My regular hostess had a doctor's appointment, and I told her I'd fill in. She should be back soon. Are you here to eat or just to see if you can find out something about PK's murder?" "Both," Hannah admitted. "I called earlier, and your regular hostess told me that Georgina was working. Could Michelle and I please sit in her section?" "Sure thing," Nona said, "and I understand completely. Georgina's a great source of information about everyone who comes in here. Follow me, and I'll take you to one of her tables." Hannah stopped to pet Albert, the stuffed grizzly bear. Albert stood upright on his rear legs, almost as if he were guarding the patrons who entered the dining room. Michelle, who had been fascinated with Albert when she was a child, also gave him a pat as she walked by. Albert was a fixture at the corner tavern. The story was that Nick had inherited the restaurant, and Albert, from his grandfather, Nicholas. He was the man who'd opened the restaurant, shot the grizzly in the woods, and had gone to a taxidermist to have Albert preserved. Albert had been standing at the door to the dining room for 3 generations, and since Nick and Nona had a son named Nicky, it was entirely possible that Albert would stand guard for another Nicholas. People who studied Minnesota history had doubts about Albert's origin, since grizzly bears weren't known to frequent the woods in Minnesota. Despite that, no one wanted to doubt how Albert had come to the corner tavern, and the story had become a local legend. "I'll see if I can find a four-top open in Georgina's section," Nona told them. "That way you girls will have the extra chairs for your purses." Hannah smiled. "We'd love a four-top. Michelle and I are so hungry we're going to cover the whole tabletop with food." Nona laughed as they followed her past the bar and through the arch that separated the bar from the area reserved for tables, chairs, and booths. She gestured to a table in the center of the room and asked, "How's this one?" "It's just fine," Hannah said, taking a seat at the table. "If you see Nick, say hi for us." "I will, if he doesn't notice you out here and come over to say hello himself. Enjoy your late lunch, girls." Georgina saw them almost immediately and rushed over to them. "I was wondering when you'd get around to me," she told Hannah. "Then you have some information that might help us?" Georgina shrugged. "I don't know. On one hand, maybe it will. On the other hand, maybe it won't. You can decide that for yourselves after I tell you." "When will that be?" Hannah asked the important question. "A few minutes after I deliver your food. I'm due for my break in 20 minutes, and I'll come and sit down with you." Raisin and Almond Crunch Cookies. Preheat oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit, rack in the middle position. 1/2 cup salted butter, softened, 1 stick, 4 ounces, 1/4 pound. 1/2 cup almond butter, I used Jif. 1 cup white granulated sugar. 1 cup brown sugar, pack it down in the cup when you measure it. 2 teaspoons vanilla extract. 1 teaspoon baking soda. 2 large eggs, beaten, just whip them up in a glass with a fork. 2 cups crushed salted potato chips, measure after crushing. I used regular, thin, unflavored Lay's potato chips. 2 1/2 cups all-purpose flour. Pack it down in the cup when you measure it. 1 cup regular or golden raisins. Hannah's first note. 5 to 6 cups of whole potato chips will crush into about 2 cups. Mix the softened salted butter with the almond butter. Beat until they form a smooth mixture. Add the white sugar and the brown sugar. Beat them until the mixture is light and fluffy. Add the vanilla extract and the baking soda. Mix them in thoroughly. Break the eggs into a glass and whip them up with a whisk or a fork. Add them to your bowl and mix until they are thoroughly incorporated. Put your potato chips in a closable plastic bag. Seal it carefully. You don't want crumbs all over your counter. And place the bag on a flat surface. Get out your rolling pin and roll it over the bag, crushing the potato chips inside. Do this until the pieces resemble coarse gravel. If you crush them too much, you won't have any crunch left. Measure out 2 cups of crushed potato chips and add them to the mixing bowl. Stir until they're incorporated. Add the flour in half-cup increments, mixing after each addition. You don't have to be exact, just eyeball it and add what you think is a half-cup at a time. If you're using an electric mixer, take the bowl out and scrape it down the sides with a rubber spatula. Add the cup of raisins to your cookie dough. Mix them in by hand with a wooden spoon. Let the dough sit on the counter while you prepare your cookie sheets. Spray your cookie sheets with Pam or another nonstick cooking spray, or line them with parchment paper, leaving little ears at the top and bottom. That way, when your cookies are baked, you can pull the paper, baked cookies and all, over onto a wire rack to cool. Drop your cookie dough by rounded teaspoons onto your cookie sheets, 12 cookies on each standard-sized sheet. Hannah's second note, Lisa and I use a 2-teaspoon cookie scoop when we bake these at the cookie jar. It's faster than doing it with a spoon. Bake your raisin and almond crunch cookies at 350 degrees Fahrenheit for 10 to 12 minutes, or until nicely browned. Mine took 11 minutes. Let the cookies cool for 2 minutes on the cookie sheet, then remove them with a metal spatula to wire racks to finish cooling. If you used parchment paper, simply pull the paper over and onto the wire rack. Yield approximately 5 dozen chewy, sweet, and salty cookies that are sure to please everyone who tastes them. Hannah's third note, this recipe can be doubled if you wish, but do not double the baking soda. Just use the 1 teaspoon it calls for in the original recipe. Hannah's fourth note, these cookies are Norman's favorite. Of course, he always says that any new cookie he tastes is his new favorite. Andrea likes them, too, even though she claims to hate raisins. Chapter 23 The hamburgers were just as juicy and delicious as they always were. The fries and the onion rings were crispy, and the small dinner salads they ordered were cold and crunchy. They had 2 sides of blue cheese dressing apiece, one to spoon over their salads and the other to use as a dip for their French fries and onion rings. Hannah gave a satisfied sigh as she swallowed her last French fry and leaned back in her chair. "I'm full," she declared. "So am I. But I've got 1 onion ring left, and I can't let it go to waste." Michelle picked up the final onion ring, dipped it in the blue cheese dressing, and munched until it was gone. "I think that last onion ring turned a late lunch into lunch and dinner combined," Michelle said.
"I hope you feel differently around 6:30 tonight."
"Why?"
"I put dinner in the slow cooker before I left the condo this morning. Since Norman bought us dinner last night, I thought I'd invite him for dinner with us tonight."
"Oh, so that's what delayed you this morning. I was beginning to worry that your cookie truck had broken down or something. I was going to ask you why you were late, but we were so busy in the coffee shop I forgot to ask. What did you make?"
"Lick your chops pork, and I thought I'd try Sally's Piccadilly mini muffins to go with it."
"Yum! I'll make dessert. Butterscotch marshmallow bar cookies only take a couple of minutes to put together. I can run down to the Red Owl and get what I need. I just love those bar cookies."
Hannah noticed that a surprised expression had crossed Michelle's face right after she'd mentioned the bar cookies. "What is it?" she asked.
"I didn't think I'd want any dinner, but now I think I may be able to eat after all."
Hannah laughed, and just then Georgina arrived with the coffee carafe and 3 cups.
"I'm on break," she announced. "Is it all right if I join you for coffee?"
"It certainly is," Hannah said, and Michelle reached out to grab her purse from the extra chair closest to her.
"Sit here, Georgina," Michelle told her.
"Thanks,"
Georgina poured them all a cup of coffee, and then she sat down.
"Are you interested in hearing some things about PK's fiancé, Pinky?"
she asked them.
"Or maybe I should call her PK's former fiancé."
"We're definitely interested," Hannah told her. "We're looking into their relationship as part of our investigation." A satisfied smile crossed Georgina's face, but it disappeared quickly.
"I can tell you that things were a lot different than they looked from the outside. She was in here the night they broke up, and Pinky was a real piece of work."
"What makes you say that?" Michelle asked her.
"Whenever she came in here with PK, she seemed so nice. She always had the fish sticks or the chicken burger, and she always told him that she didn't mind if he had red meat, that it didn't really bother her, but she didn't want to eat it. I thought that was very nice of her because PK just loved our double doubles. You know what those are, don't you?"
"Oh, yes," Hannah told her. "Two patties, two pieces of cheese."
"Right. Anyway, the night they broke up, Pinky came in here and ordered a double double. It just about shocked me right out of my shoes. And then she ordered a double Bloody Mary to go with it."
"What did you say?" Hannah asked, knowing that Georgina could be outspoken.
"I just stared at her, and she laughed. And then she pointed to her ring finger. 'He's gone,' she said. 'I don't have to do that stuff anymore. Now I can be myself, so I'm celebrating. Hurry with that drink, will you, Georgina? I really need it tonight.'"
"Wow," Michelle said. "I can see why you were shocked."
"There was no way I was going to say anything critical to her, not when she was in that kind of mood. I just went to the bar, got her drink, and brought it right back to her. She drank almost half of it right there in front of me, and then she smiled."
"That's better," she said. Michelle just shook her head. If that was the first drink she'd ever had, it must have put her under the table. Georgina shook her head.
"Nope. She handled it just fine. And once her Bloody Mary was gone, she told me that PK was so straight-laced that every once in a while she needed to cut loose and be herself."
Hannah wasn't as shocked as Michelle appeared to be by that revelation. She'd almost expected something like that. "Did she eat her double-double?"
"Yes, all of it. And then she paid the bill and left. I have a suspicion, though."
"What's that?" Hannah asked her.
"I think she went to the bar to have another couple of drinks before she went home. You should stop there and ask Bobby. He's our night bartender now, and I know he was working that night."
"What'll it be, ladies?" the bartender asked as Hannah and Michelle slid onto two vacant stools. The bar was almost deserted this time of day. It was too early for a drink after work and too late for a drink at lunch.
"I'll have a virgin Cuba Libre," Michelle said, smiling at him.
"And for you, ma'am?" the bartender turned to Hannah.
"A virgin Bloody Mary." The bartender looked a bit confused.
"You're sitting at the bar, but neither one of you drinks?"
Michelle laughed. "We drink, but we have to get back to work, and we wanted to talk to you first."
"That's right," Hannah followed up.
"You're Bobby, aren't you?"
"That's me. What did you want to talk about?"
"Georgina told us that you were the night bartender," Hannah explained. "We're trying to locate a woman named Pinky, and Georgina thought she might have come in here for a couple of drinks after she ate at Georgina's station in the dining room."
"Georgina's right. What do you want with Pinky?"
"We want to ask her about her former boyfriend." Bobby nodded.
"PK. I heard about his murder." "What are you, cops?"
"No," Hannah said, "but we're working with them. It's a really complicated case. That's why we'd like to talk to Pinky." Bobby began to frown.
"Do the cops think she did it?"
Hannah knew it was time to tread carefully. Bobby might have some reason to try to protect Pinky. "Not really. They just want to know if she has any information that might relate to the case."
"Like what?"
Bobby asked. "Like whether she knew if PK had any enemies that might have wanted to harm him," Michelle answered him. They want to know if Pinky suspects anyone of killing PK.
Okay, I guess that makes sense.
Bobby gave a quick nod.
She might know something. One night she told me that they were together a long time, and their romance started way back in high school. She probably knew him better than anybody else.
So, can you help us find Pinky? Hannah asked the most important question. Bobby shook his head.
I would if I could, but I can't help you there. I haven't seen Pinky for over a month, maybe longer. She might have been around, but she didn't come in the bar while I was working.
Do you know where she lives? Hannah asked him. Bobby shook his head.
No. She never said, not exactly. Except...
What? Hannah and Michelle asked almost simultaneously.
I heard her mention something about paying her rent. And if she owned a house, she would have said house payment instead of rent. It was probably an apartment somewhere because she complained that her neighbors downstairs played their music so loud she couldn't sleep in on Sunday mornings. That's all I know, though.
Thanks, Bobby, Hannah said.
Sorry I couldn't help you more, Bobby told them. I'd kind of like to know what happened to Pinky. She was here a lot, and then she just dropped out of sight.
I'm curious, Michelle said. When Pinky came in here, did she drink a lot?
Oh, yeah. Pinky always had doubles, and she had more than one, that's for sure. The guys in here used to buy her drinks to get on her good side so they could dance with her. Pinky loved to dance.
Did she, go home with any of them? Hannah asked.
Nope. She just danced with them and flirted a little, but that's it. And then she drove home alone in her pink Jeep.
Chapter 24. The sisters were silent as they went out to Hannah's cookie truck and began to drive back to the cookie jar. Both of them were busy mulling over what Bobby had told them. They were just turning at Main Street and First when Michelle spoke.
I don't know about you, but I think Pinky was drinking all along, and she just pretended not to drink around PK.
I agree. And after a while, the pretense got to her, and she just couldn't do it anymore. It really wasn't a good relationship, that much is clear.
Do you think that one night, when Pinky was drinking a lot, she might have plotted to kill PK?
I think it's possible, Hannah said, but there's no way of knowing for sure. Pinky could just be another red herring.
Pink herring, Michelle corrected her.
Or... if what Georgina and Bobby told us about Pinky's drinking is true, Pinky could have been a pickled herring. Michelle laughed.
That's awful, Hannah.
I know, but I thought we needed a little levity. There was a long moment of silence before Michelle spoke again.
We've got to find her, Hannah. Pinky could be the killer.
I know. Hannah pulled into her parking spot in back of the cookie jar. It was cold outside, and she gave a fleeting thought to plugging her car into the strip of electrical outlets that ran along a wooden strip in front of the parking spaces. But she decided that it wasn't quite cold enough to bother.
"Aren't you going to plug in your truck?" Michelle asked.
"No, not yet. We're planning to leave again soon."
"Where are we going?"
"The library's not open this afternoon, but Marge always carries the keys with her. I'm going to ask her if she still has a shelf with all the yearbooks from the high schools in our area. If she does, I'll get the keys to the library from her, and we'll go down to look at the Clarissa High yearbook to see if we can identify Pinky."
"That's a good idea," Michelle said, "but neither of us has ever seen Pinky, and we don't know her real name. How are we going to identify her?"
"I'm not sure, but Pinky went to school with PK. And a school yearbook usually contains some student photos." Michelle looked excited.
"You're right. I didn't even think of that. There may be a photo of PK and Pinky together.
And maybe, if it's a student photo, she might be called Pinky in the caption under the photo.
And then all we have to do is go through the official class pictures, find her there, and we'll know her real name."
Michelle gave Hannah a huge smile.
"You're brilliant, Hannah. Let's go see Marge."
The two sisters gathered their things and got out of Hannah's cookie truck. They walked together to the back of the building, and Hannah opened the back kitchen door. As they stepped in, they wiped their feet on the mat just inside the door and hung their parkas on the hooks on the wall. But before they could make their way to the swinging door that separated the kitchen from the coffee shop, Aunt Nancy pushed it open and rushed into the kitchen.
"Oh, good," she said. "I thought I heard you come in. Do you have a minute, Hannah? I really have to talk to you."
"I'll go find Marge," Michelle told Hannah, making herself scarce by hurrying through the swinging door that Aunt Nancy had just entered. "Coffee?" Hannah asked, noticing that Aunt Nancy looked worried about something.
"Yes, thanks, but I'll get it," Aunt Nancy offered. "You sit down. I'll be right with you."
Hannah took her usual stool at the workstation and watched Aunt Nancy rush to the kitchen coffee pot. As she poured two cups, Hannah noticed that her hands were shaking. Something was wrong with Aunt Nancy, and Hannah hoped that it wasn't anything serious. Once Aunt Nancy had added cream and sugar to her coffee, she carried both cups back to the workstation.
"Here you go,"
she said, setting one cup down on the stainless steel surface in front of Hannah. Then she went to the opposite side, put down her coffee cup, and sat down. "What's the matter?" Hannah asked her, not waiting for Aunt Nancy to broach the subject that was bothering her. "You look upset."
"I am. I've never had a situation like this before in my life, and I don't know what it means."
Hannah smiled to set her at ease and took a sip of her own coffee. "Tell me about it," she invited.
"It's Haiti. He dropped by to see me a few minutes ago. He said that Bill had offered him a job at the Winnetka County Sheriff's Station. Bill said that they really need him and they want Haiti to start right away."
"But that's good, isn't it?" Hannah asked.
"I don't know. Haiti told me all about it, how he'd be working to update some of their equipment and maintain it, and then he asked me if I wanted him to take the job and stay in Lake Eden."
Aunt Nancy gave a quivering sigh.
"Why did he ask me that, Hannah?"
Before she answered, Hannah had something she wanted to know. "Do you want Haiti to stay here?"
"Of course I do,"
the answer came without hesitation and emphatically.
"I like Haiti very much, and I'd miss him dreadfully if he left town. But why did he ask me, Hannah?"
"I suspect it was because he wanted to hear you say exactly what you told me. Haiti needed reassurance that you wanted him in your life." Aunt Nancy thought about that for a moment, and then a smile spread across her face.
"Really?"
she asked in a soft voice.
"Really? I can't think of any other reason why he would ask you."
"Then..."
Aunt Nancy stopped and took a deep breath.
"Then do you think that Haiti really likes me?"
"Without a doubt. A man doesn't ask a woman if she wants him to stay, unless he's hoping she'll say she does."
"That's... well, it's wonderful."
Hannah noticed that Aunt Nancy looked as if she'd pulled the handle on the giant slot machine in the lobby of the Twin Pines Casino and won the $1 million prize.
"Thank you, Hannah,"
Aunt Nancy said, jumping up from her stool.
"I'd better get back to work."
Hannah smiled as Aunt Nancy ran to the swinging door and pushed through without even looking through the diamond-shaped window to see if anyone was coming from the other side. She'd obviously heard precisely what she'd hoped to hear, and even though Hannah could no longer see her, she knew that Aunt Nancy was smiling from ear to ear. Her coffee was fresh and hot, and Hannah decided to finish it. She would need a little energy to get through the rest of the day.
"I'm back,"
Michelle announced, coming through the door and hurrying over to the workstation.
"Marge gave me the keys. She said the lights are on the wall, on our right, as we come in, and we should be sure to lock the door when we leave."
Michelle sat down on the stool that Aunt Nancy had just vacated, and when she noticed the almost full cup of coffee, a puzzled expression crossed her face.
"What happened with Aunt Nancy?" she asked. "She came back in the coffee shop with a huge smile on her face."
"I told her what she wanted to hear," Hannah said.
"What was that?"
Michelle looked curious.
"I don't have time to go into it now, but I'll tell you all about it on the way to the library."
"Here it is,"
Michelle said, handing Hannah the slim volume with the words Clarissa High on the front in gold lettering.
This is the year that PK was a junior, and he told me that he started dating Pinky after they were in the junior play together.
Did he have a part in the play?
No, he was the head of the technical crew, and he ran the light board. He told me it was ancient and had always needed repair.
And Pinky was in the crew, too?
I don't know. He didn't say.
Michelle sat down next to Hannah at the long library table so that they could look at the yearbook together. The front pages of the yearbook were filled with class photos. There was the freshman class, the sophomores, and the juniors. The names were listed, but since they didn't know what Pinky looked like, they couldn't identify her. "Here's the official photo of the play," Hannah said, and Michelle leaned closer.
"It gives the names, but that doesn't do us any good," Michelle sounded very disappointed. "It just says it's the cast and crew of Adam's Rib. That must be the play they did."
Hannah drew in her breath sharply.
"Adam's Rib? So that's where Pinky got it."
"Got what?"
"Her nickname. She must have had the female lead, the one Katharine Hepburn had in the movie. It was about two married lawyers, and they both had red hair. Spencer Tracy's character and Katharine Hepburn's character were both called Pinky, except they were spelled differently. The play is based on a true story about a couple who was getting a divorce, and after the divorce was final, the real couple ended up remarrying. She married her lawyer, and he married his lawyer."
"That's interesting. But we still don't know Pinky's real name," Michelle pointed out.
"Let's try the following year, when both of them were seniors," Hannah suggested. "Senior pictures are usually headshots, and the names are listed. Maybe Pinky will be wearing pink."
Michelle nodded. "Okay, if we're lucky, Pinky's high school published the senior photos in color. We did that at Jordan High, but I was on the yearbook staff, and I know it cost a lot more. We won't be able to tell if Pinky is wearing pink, unless Clarissa High went for the color photo option."
"You're right." Hannah felt a bit foolish for not realizing that. When she'd graduated from Jordan High, her senior photo had been published in black and white. "Even if Pinky's high school didn't go for the color option, they may have listed the nicknames under the senior photos."
"That's true," Michelle agreed. "I'll get the yearbook for the next year and put this one back."
"Leave it here, Michelle," Hannah said when her sister reached for the yearbook. "We'll compare the photo of the cast and crew of Adam's Rib to the senior photos in the next yearbook. At least we'll be able to identify the senior photos of the girls who were in the cast and crew of the play."
"But we still won't know which one of them is Pinky," Michelle pointed out.
"That's true, but it's a way of narrowing it down a little. We can eliminate the girls who weren't in the photo."
"You're right. I'll get the next yearbook."
Michelle walked to the yearbook section of the library and examined the books that were there. The yearbook for the following year was out of place, and it took her a minute or two to locate it. When she did, she pulled it down, walked back to Hannah to hand it to her, and sat down in her chair again. "Thanks," Hannah said, flipping straight to the individual senior photos near the end.
"We're in luck. They're in color."
As Hannah paged through the senior photos, Michelle groaned.
"There are at least 10 girls wearing shades of pink. It must have been a really popular color that year."
"It must have been," Hannah agreed, and then she began to smile.
"I think I found a match, Michelle."
Michelle leaned over and studied the photo that Hannah had chosen.
"I think you're right. She has different glasses, but her hairstyle is the same, and she's wearing a light shade of pink. That's the girl at the far end of the top row, isn't it?"
"I think so. Her name is Misty Franklin."
The two sisters agreed on 4 more matches, and Hannah wrote them down in her murder book. She'd just finished when Michelle let out a whoop of excitement.
"There's Pinky, Hannah!" she exclaimed.
Hannah studied the photo for a moment, and then she turned to the cast and crew photo. "It's the girl in the center of the front row, and the two photos match. But there are other matches, too. Why do you think that this particular girl is Pinky?"
"Because she's short, and PK mentioned that he could hold out his arm and Pinky could walk right under it."
"But how do you know that the girl in the senior photo is short?"
I can't tell from her senior photo, but she's in the front row in the cast and crew photo, and almost everyone there is taller than she is. And when they take group photos, the photographer always puts the shortest people in the front row.
Good point, Hannah turned back to the senior photo. Her name is Mary Jo Hart. Does that sound familiar to you?
No, but PK never mentioned her by name.
Hannah turned back to the senior photos. I think you could be right about Mary Jo Hart, Michelle.
What makes you say that?
Under her credits, it lists both the junior and senior class plays. None of the other girls wearing pink were in both plays.
Okay. Let's assume that Pinky is Mary Jo Hart. How do we find out for sure?
Hannah looked down at her wrist and realized that she'd forgotten her watch at the cookie jar.
What time is it, Michelle?
Michelle looked at the display on her cell phone.
Almost a quarter after four.
On a Thursday, Hannah began to smile. We've got a chance of finding out more if you call Clarissa High and there's someone who's still in the office.
Got it.
Michelle found the number of the office on the high school's website. She punched in the number and switched to speakerphone mode so that Hannah could hear it ringing. The phone rang five times, and Hannah began to frown. I think the office is closed.
Maybe not. Let's give it 10 rings before we give up.
The phone rang 3 more times, and then a woman answered.
Clarissa, hi. This is Lila speaking.
Hi, Lila. I have Miss Swenson on the phone for the principal. Is he still in?
No, I'm sorry, but he had to leave early today. Is there anything I can do to help you?
Michelle handed the phone to Hannah.
Hello, Lila. This is Hannah Swenson from Swenson Enterprises. I'm calling to see if the school has a current phone number and address for one of our job applicants, Mary Jo Hart. The address and phone number on her resume are no longer current, and we'd like to speak to her about an opening in our corporation.
Oh, dear.
Lila sounded very distressed.
I'm afraid that, well, Miss Hart is no longer, available.
An expression of surprise crossed Hannah's face, and it was mirrored on Michelle's. Oh, I see. If you don't mind me asking, has Miss Hart found another position? There was a long pause, and then Lila spoke again.
No, not exactly. Miss Hart is no longer with us.
Hannah felt her hopes sink. If Lila meant what Hannah feared she meant, Mary Jo Hart was dead. We are speaking about the same person, aren't we? Hannah continued. The Mary Jo Hart who applied with us gave her nickname as Pinky.
Yes, that was Pinky, Lila responded. She had the lead in the junior play, and after that everyone began to call her Pinky. And now both of them are gone. They were two of our most promising students, and it's so terribly sad. I read about what happened to Porter in the papers.
Oh, my, Hannah said. Was Pinky murdered, too?
Lila hesitated, and then she sighed heavily.
Pinky committed suicide. I'm not exactly sure how, but someone told me it was pills.
That must have been devastating for her family, Hannah said, hoping to get even more information. How long ago was that?
A little over a month. Such a waste. She was a lovely girl. I think poor Pinky went into a terrible depression when Porter broke off their engagement. Porter was the love of her life, and a real stabilizing influence on her in high school.
Stabilizing? Hannah asked, trolling for more clarification.
Yes. I knew Pinky quite well, and it had a profound effect on her life when her parents died. A terrible accident on the freeway coming from the airport in the cities. Her brother did all he could to help her, but he had to work to support them. He had a very good job in the cities, and he came home every weekend to be with her.
So Pinky lived alone in her parents' house?
Her parents' farm, Lila corrected her. But it's hard to be all alone in a farmhouse way out in the country. Pinky's brother ended up selling the farm and renting a two-bedroom apartment in town for them.
Was Pinky glad to move to town? Hannah asked her.
Yes, it saved her a long bus ride to school. I never personally met her brother, but she talked about him all the time.
Do you remember his name? Hannah asked. There was a long silence, and then Lila sighed.
I just don't recall. It was something simple, like Bob or Tom, but I can't remember it. He sounded like a really nice man. I know he tried very hard to take care of Pinky, but he was gone all week, and I think Pinky was lonely. She had Porter, but he worked part-time after school, and he couldn't spend all of his time with her.
Didn't Pinky have any friends?
The rest of the girls liked her, but she didn't have a best friend or anything like that. Except for Porter, Pinky was a bit of a loner.
You know the type. Friendly enough, but subdued. I think that was why she liked to hang around the office and help me after school. To tell the truth, I think that's why she got a good job when she graduated. She had front office experience.
There was a pause, and then Lila spoke again. Here I go running off my mouth again. I think that's because the whole thing is so sad. I can't believe that Pinky and Porter are both gone.
Thank you for telling me all this, Hannah said. And I want you to know that I'm sorry, too. I really wanted to hire Pinky as a high-level secretary.
Oh, that would have been much better than the job she had, Lila said. She worked for Dr. Benson, and I don't think he utilized her skills well enough. She took bookkeeping, typing, filing, and computer science here at Clarissa High. She passed all those business classes with A's. And all Dr. Benson wanted her to do for him was answer the phone and keep his appointment book. Believe me, Pinky was capable of a more demanding job than that.
Butterscotch Marshmallow Bar Cookies. Preheat oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit, rack in the middle position. 10-ounce package Lorna Doone Shortbread Cookies. If you can't find them, you can use pecan sandies or Nilla wafers. 2 cups miniature marshmallows, white, not colored. 6-ounce package butterscotch chips, approximately 1 cup. I used Nestle. 1 cup chopped pecans, 2 teaspoons kosher or sea salt, 1/2 cup butter, 1 stick, 1/4 pound, 1/2 cup brown sugar, firmly packed, 1 teaspoon vanilla extract. Spray a 9-inch by 13-inch cake pan with Pam or other nonstick spray. If you like, buy a disposable foil pan at the grocery store, place it on a cookie sheet to support the bottom, and then you won't have to clean up. You can also avoid cleanup by lining your regular cake pan with heavy-duty aluminum foil. Line the bottom of the pan with a layer of Lorna Doone shortbread cookies. It's okay to overlap a little. Alternatively, crush the round cookies and spread the cookie crumbs out over the bottom of the pan. Make enough cookie crumbs to completely cover the bottom and press them down with a metal spatula when you're through. Hannah's first note: if you couldn't find the shortbread cookies and you need to use round cookies instead, crush the cookies by putting them in a sealable plastic bag and rolling them with a rolling pin or dropping them into a food processor and processing in an on and off motion with the steel blade. The crumbs should be the size of coarse gravel. Sprinkle the shortbread cookies, or the cookie crumbs, with the marshmallows. Cover the marshmallows with the butterscotch chips. Cover the butterscotch chips with the chopped pecans. Sprinkle the chopped pecans with 2 teaspoons of kosher or sea salt. In a small saucepan over low heat, combine the butter and brown sugar. Stir the mixture constantly until the sugar is dissolved. Hannah's second note: alternatively, you can place the butter and brown sugar in a microwave-safe container and melt it on high for 1 minute. If you choose to do it this way, let the mixture sit in the microwave for another minute, and then take it out and stir it to see if the brown sugar has melted. If it hasn't, process it for another 20 seconds, let it sit in the microwave for another minute, and try again. Repeat as often as necessary. Once you have melted your butter and brown sugar and stirred the mixture smooth, add the vanilla extract and stir it in thoroughly. Drizzle the butter, brown sugar, and vanilla extract mixture over the contents of the cake pan as evenly as you can. Bake your butterscotch marshmallow bar cookies at 350 degrees Fahrenheit for 10 to 12 minutes or until the bar cookies are golden brown on top. Remove the pan from the oven and cool it on a wire rack. When the bar cookies are completely cool, cut them into brownie-sized pieces and serve. If there are any leftovers, which there won't be unless you have less than 3 people, store them in the refrigerator in a covered container. They can also be wrapped, sealed in a freezer bag, and frozen for up to 2 months. Yield 2.5 to 3 dozen yummy treats that will please adults and kids alike. Hannah's third note. Tracy loves to make these with me and take them to class for a treat, since her little sister Bethy wants to help. Her job is to take the marshmallows out of the bag one by one and put them in the measuring cup. Bethy does a really good job doing this, and Tracy and I pretend not to notice if she eats a couple of marshmallows while she's doing it. Piccadilly Cheese Mini Muffins. Pickle Dilly. Preheat oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit, rack in the middle position. 1.5 cups dry biscuit mix. I used Bisquick. 3/4 cup grated cheddar cheese. I used Kraft Sharp Cheddar. 1/4 teaspoon garlic powder. 1/4 teaspoon onion powder. 1/4 teaspoon salt. 1 tablespoon white granulated sugar. 1/4 teaspoon dry mustard. 1/8 cup, 2 tablespoons, whole milk. 1 large egg, beaten. Just whip it up in a glass with a fork. 1/4 cup dill pickle relish. I used Vlasic dill relish. Hannah's first note. Do not mix up these mini muffins with an electric mixer. Anytime you make muffins, they should be mixed by hand for best results. Hannah's second note. This recipe can be doubled, but only use 1 egg, not 2. Prepare your baking pans by filling 2 mini muffin pans, 6 cups apiece, with mini muffin papers. Measure out 1.5 cups of biscuit mix and place it in a medium-sized bowl. Press it down in the cup when you measure it. Sprinkle the sharp grated cheddar cheese on top of the biscuit mix. Sprinkle on the garlic powder. Sprinkle on the onion powder. Sprinkle on the 1/4 teaspoon of salt. Sprinkle on the tablespoon of sugar. Sprinkle on the dry mustard. Mix all the dry ingredients together with a wooden spoon. Pour the whole milk in a small bowl and add the beaten egg. Mix with a fork, you can use the same fork you used to whip up the egg, until they are thoroughly blended. Pat the dill pickle relish with paper towels to get off some of the moisture. Then add it to the bowl with the milk and egg. Mix well with the fork. Pour the contents of the small bowl, the wet ingredients, into the medium-sized bowl, the dry ingredients. Mix them with the wooden spoon just until they are blended. Do not overmix. There are supposed to be some small lumps. Using a small melon baller or a teaspoon from your silverware drawer, fill the mini muffin cups almost but not quite to the top of the cups. Hannah's third note. These mini muffins don't rise very much, just enough to get rounded on the tops. Bake your Piccadilly Cheese mini muffins at 350 degrees Fahrenheit for 12 to 15 minutes, or until they are golden brown on the tops. You can test your mini muffins for doneness by inserting a toothpick into the center. If the toothpick comes out without sticky dough clinging to the sides, your mini muffins are done. Hannah's fourth note. You can also make this recipe as regular size muffins using a cupcake pan. If you do this, you'll need to bake your larger muffins for 20 to 25 minutes. Yield, approximately 3 dozen mini muffins. Chapter 25. Great meal, Hannah, Norman said, leaning back in his chair. I don't think I could eat another bite.
Not even my butterscotch marshmallow bar cookies? Michelle asked him.
Oh, boy, Lonnie said before Norman could respond.
Butterscotch and marshmallows are two of my favorite things. They sound great, Shelley.
I might try one, Norman admitted with a smile. I don't think I can handle more. I ate 2 pork chops and 3 of Hannah's Piccadilly mini muffins.
Mike just smiled as he chewed, and then he held up his thumb and forefinger in an okay sign. Hannah could understand why Mike was currently speechless. He was too busy eating his 4th pork chop and his 5th mini muffin. Hannah stood up, intending to clear the table, but Michelle waved her back down.
Lonnie and I will clear the table, put up the coffee, and cut the bar cookies, she said. Just relax, and try not to trip over Moishe if you go down the hallway for anything. He did the Moishe flop again, and he's in the middle of the hallway, stretched out and sleeping.
What's the Moishe flop?
Mike asked, popping the last bite of pork chop in his mouth and putting down his fork at last.
That's Michelle's term. Sometimes if we're walking down the hallway and Moishe is walking ahead of us, he just flops down in the middle of the carpet and goes to sleep. She turned to Norman. Does Cuddles do that?
She does something similar when I decide to go up to bed and I climb the stairs. She flops on the stairs? Mike asked.
That's right. And a second later, she's asleep.
Doesn't she roll off the step when she does that?
Norman shook his head. No, she's small and she stretches out lengthwise. I used to go up the stairs in the dark because I always leave a light on in my bedroom and there's a glow from that at the top of the stairs. Now I have to turn on the hanging light over the stairs so I don't trip over Cuddles.
Was this before or after Dr. Bob ran his tests? Hannah asked.
Both before and after. I told him about it, and he was concerned, until all her tests came back in the normal range. What did he say then? Mike asked. He told me to be very careful not to trip over Cuddles. Because you might injure her?
Not exactly. He said to be careful because he wasn't qualified to put a cast on me unless I had 4 legs.
That sounds like Dr. Bob, Hannah said with a laugh. Then she sobered and turned to Mike. How are you and Lonnie coming along with your investigation?
Slowly. We did eliminate Scotty McDonald for lack of motive. He really didn't want PK's job that much. And since PK offered to share Ross's office, there was no reason for Scotty to kill PK.
Right, Hannah said. Did you talk to anyone else?
We interviewed everyone at KCOW, and we talked to PK's parents and his aunt and uncle. We came up with a big, fat 0 for that.
Mike looked very disgruntled. How about you, Hannah?
We tried to talk to PK's former fiancée, Pinky. She was our prime suspect. We managed to find out some information about her, but this afternoon we learned that she was dead.
Yes, the suicide, Mike said. We learned about that from PK's aunt. Did you cross Pinky off your suspect list?
Hannah shook her head. No. I might have, if I hadn't done some research on her boss, Dr. Benson. He's a vet, and Pinky could have taken some animal-grade tranquilizers from his office to use in the drugged candy.
Do you know how Pinky killed herself? Mike asked.
No, but we heard it was pills. Was it an overdose of tranquilizers?
Yes. Doc called the doctor that did her autopsy, and he said they were powerful, and they might have been animal tranquilizers.
Then it's a good thing I didn't cross her name off my suspect list. Pinky could have drugged the candy with tranquilizers before she committed suicide.
But the candy didn't arrive until a couple of weeks after her death. How do you explain that?
There was an amused expression on Mike's face, and Hannah decided to set him straight. After Pinky died, someone could have gone through her things, found the addressed prepaid mailer with the candy, and put it in the mail.
Yes, that was our conclusion, too. So, do you have anyone else on your list?
Hannah made a helpless gesture.
Yes, but most of them are pretty far-fetched. It seems that every time we think we have someone promising, we're wrong.
We really don't know where to turn next.
We're in the same boat, Mike admitted. I have two of my team interviewing PK's friends to see if any of them has a possible motive. I hate to be a defeatist, but I don't expect any positive results.
Have you given up on the theory that Ross might have been the target instead of PK? Norman asked him.
No, but we've been concentrating on PK up until now. We're not discarding the notion that the candy may have been intended for Ross, but since we thought that was a long shot, we haven't done much on it yet. I do have one thing I want to check out, though. Will you let me have that storage locker key, Hannah? I can spare a couple of guys to put on that. There's a slim chance that there may be something in Ross's storage locker that will help us figure this out.
Hannah frowned slightly. She really didn't want to give up the storage locker key. Storage lockers could contain a glimpse into someone's past, and that key was her last link with Ross. It seemed almost wrong to let someone else go through his storage locker before she did.
Hannah, Norman asked, noticing her frown, is there some reason why you don't want Mike to have the key?
It took Hannah a moment to frame her answer. I guess I wanted to be the first one to look inside.
I can understand that, Mike told her. You were thinking that there might be personal stuff in there. But think of it this way, Hannah. There could be something that'll help us find out where Ross is and why he left.
Hannah sighed. Mike had dropped a dilemma in her lap. You're right. I'll go get the key. But if you don't find anything helpful there, you have to return the key to me.
I'll see to that personally. Mike promised.
Hannah got up from the table and went down the hallway to her bedroom to get the key. It was right where she'd placed it in her top drawer, and she carried it back and handed it to Mike. We already checked the storage facility next to the McAllister campus, so you don't have to go there. Unit 312 doesn't belong to Ross.
Did you check anywhere else?
No, we were too busy getting ready for Sally's gift convention. She sighed heavily and shook her head. In retrospect, perhaps we should have concentrated on finding the right storage facility.
That could be a wild goose chase, too, Mike told her. It's just that I have two guys that can spend time doing it, so we might as well turn over every stone we can find. Sometimes that's the only way to solve a complicated murder case.
Hannah nodded agreement, but in her mind she was thinking, there are way too many stones in his case, practically enough to build a wishing well. And it might take a lucky coin in a wishing well to learn who killed PK and why. Hannah knew that she had never seen so many oranges. They were stacked in a pyramid reaching almost up to the sky. Florence from the Red Owl Grocery was standing in front of them in her white cap and butcher's apron. There was a gun belt around her waist, and what looked like silver revolvers with pearl grips in both side holsters.
No oranges for you, she said to Hannah.
But why? I love oranges.
Not enough. You have to take care of your orange. Say that it's handsome, and hold it like you'll never let it go. You have to tell your orange that you adore it, that you think it's wonderful, and that it's the best orange in the world. You can't invite other oranges to your condo and treat them like friends. If your orange doesn't think that it's your most desirable orange, you know what will happen.
No, really I don't, Hannah was puzzled. Please tell me what will happen, Florence.
It's simple, and you've been through it before. The orange you chose will leave you. It'll roll away from you one day when you're not at home, and you'll never see it again.
But why?
Your chosen orange has to be your only orange. It's that simple.
If my orange rolls away, I'll just choose another. Hannah reached out for another orange, but Florence pushed her hand away.
Oh, no, you don't, Hannah Swenson.
But I need another orange.
Need schmied, Florence snorted derisively. You don't deserve another orange after the way you treated your first one.
But it wasn't my fault that my first orange rolled away.
Hannah could feel the tears gather in her eyes.
Really, it wasn't.
I should have known you wouldn't believe me. Your kind never does. You treat your orange badly, and then you're surprised when it doesn't want to stay with you.
Please, Florence, I love oranges. Can't you please let me have another? I promise I'll do better with the next orange.
Florence shook her head.
I can't give you another orange. You knew the rules. Your orange gave you the key to its heart, and you didn't appreciate what your orange had given you.
But I promise that I won't do it again.
I don't believe you. I let you have not one, but two oranges who wanted to stay with you forever. Both of them were willing to give you the keys to their hearts, and you rejected both of them. I really thought you'd changed your attitude, that you were ready to appreciate citrus. But you haven't changed one bit. It's clear to me that you don't know how to treat the oranges you say you love.
But I do, and I want one. Please, I love oranges, and I've got to have one.
Hannah? A voice asked, but it didn't sound like Florence. Perhaps Florence had developed a cold.
I want an orange. I need an orange. I can't live without an orange. Hannah, wake up. You're dreaming, the new voice said. Open your eyes and look at me.
Hannah opened her eyes. At first, everything was hazy, but then she realized that Michelle was sitting on the edge of her bed. Florence was gone. The pyramid of beautiful oranges was gone, and the nightmare began to dissolve.
I was dreaming? You certainly were. Now I know that I need to stop baking anything with fruit in the morning. You did it again.
Oh, Hannah said, waking up enough to sit up and rub her eyes, but she still felt a bit out of touch with reality. I remember now. What did you bake today? It smells scrumptious.
Orange marmalade muffins. You still had that big jar of marmalade in your pantry. I made three batches so we can take some with us to our booth at the convention.
Just smelling them makes me hungry, Hannah told her. I'll take a quick shower, get dressed as fast as I can, and come out to the kitchen to taste one.
Do you want me to bring you a wake-up cup of coffee?
No, thanks. I can wait. The shower will wake me up.
Just as a precaution, please remember not to tip your head up toward the bathroom ceiling.
Why?
Because if you fall asleep in the shower that way, you'll probably drown.
Hannah was true to her word. She showered and dressed as fast as she could, and she was in the kitchen only a few minutes past the 10-minute mark. She started to walk toward the coffee pot, but Michelle waved her down into a chair at the kitchen table.
I'll get it, she said. I can see you're ambulatory, but I don't think you're ready to carry a hot cup of coffee quite yet.
Hannah sank down in the chair at the formica-topped table that was soon to become an antique, along with the matching chairs and the apple-shaped clock that hung on the wall.
Thanks, she said when Michelle set the coffee mug in front of her.
Muffins?
Coming right up, Michelle reassured her. She tipped two muffins out of the tin, put them on a plate, and carried it to the table.
I haven't had one yet either, she said, fetching another cup of coffee and sitting down across from Hannah.
Hannah peeled off the cupcake paper and split the muffin in half. The warm orange marmalade was pooled in the center, and she breathed deeply.
I love oranges, she said, biting into the muffin without benefit of butter.
What do you think? Michelle asked her.
I think these are winners.
She took another bite and looked thoughtful. Is that oatmeal I taste?
Yes. These are orange marmalade-filled oatmeal muffins. I thought the orange and the oatmeal would be a good combination.
You thought right.
Hannah reached for the dish of salted butter on the table and buttered the other half of her muffin. Then she took another bite and smiled. They're great with salted butter, too.
Let it cool and see how that tastes, Michelle advised.
Hannah shook her head.
Not on a bet. They're too good, warm. I'll let my second one cool, if I can wait that long.
Just then the phone rang, and since Michelle was closer, she reached up to the wall phone and grabbed the receiver.
Hello?
She answered. There was a moment of silence while Michelle listened to the caller, and then she stretched out the cord and handed the receiver to Hannah.
It's Sue, from Dr. Bob's office.
Hi, Sue, Hannah greeted her. Are you calling with the results of Moisha's tests?
Yes, I am.
But it's more than an hour before you open. Are you at the office already?
No, we're having our first cup of coffee, but I knew you'd be up and Bob wanted me to call. He says that Moisha is a very healthy kid.